Welcome to Django's News and Updates podcast, the accompanying podcast to Django's blog and update email. These are the updates for the 28 days to the 26th of January 2014. The latest official version of Django is 1.6.1, and the current production versions of Python are 2.7.6 and 3.3.3. This podcast is intended to provide brief summary coverage of the current activity in the Django community, covering release information, news and upcoming events and community events. And in this show, we have an interview with Andrew Godwin about the 1.7 release, where he's the release manager. We have an interview with Russell Keith McGee about several of the new features in the 1.7 release, as well as some other interesting background to the community. And we have an interview with Daniele Procida, who is responsible for some of the upcoming events in Europe. And we have the usual summary of the dev list. There were no security updates for this period. Firstly, upcoming cutoff and closing dates. These are things that are happening in the next 4 weeks. Firstly, and most importantly, on the 1st of February, which is in just a couple of days, is the cutoff for the call for speakers for DjangoCon Europe. This is the DjangoCon that's going to be held on its own island in the Mediterranean during summer. If you would like to go to that as a speaker, you need to get your proposal in before the 1st of February. And that's DjangoCon Europe. On the 7th of February is the beginning of the Django weekend in Cardiff. The conference itself is sold out, but anyone is still welcome to the first day on Friday the 7th of February. And that's the Django weekend in Cardiff. On the 22nd of February are the Django sprints in Amsterdam. And even if you can't make it down to Amsterdam, mark the date, that's the weekend of the 22nd of February, as you can hop on the IRC channel on Freenode, and the channel is #Django-sprint, and they'll be doing bug fixes for the 1.7 beta release. Also on the 22nd and 23rd of February is PyCon Philippines. Also, Kenneth Love tweeted me that the tutorials for PyCon are selling out fast, so if you're interested in going to one of those, get onto that quick smart. In release news, Django 1.7 Alpha 1 was released. James Bennett posted on the 22nd of January. They released Django 1.7 Alpha 1, a preview testing package that represents the first stage in the 1.7 release cycle, and a chance for everybody to try out some of the changes coming up in Django 1.7. There are the full details in the release notes, and there are already a couple of bugs that have been picked up in the alpha package that will undoubtedly be fixed pretty soon. I had the very good fortune of being able to spend some time talking to the new 1.7 release manager, Andrew Godwin. Firstly, I wanted to ask you, Andrew, about your role as release manager. You're the new release manager for version 1.7.
That's right, yes. So my role essentially is to do a couple of things. The first thing is sort of be the go-to person for calling if a release should go out. So for example, with the recent 1.7 alpha at the time of recording, I had to make the no-go call on that on the 20th and sit back while we resolved a few issues, and then we finally cut a release on the 23rd. But also, if there's sort of serious bugs, I'm the person who has to sort of step in and work out if I can fix them myself, if I need to find other core developers to fix them, if there's community patches we can roll in quickly, sort of to be the on-point person with enough time to dedicate to getting that release out on a timely fashion. And finally, it's understand all the things in the release and how they could impact each other and sort of work out any differences there might be as well.
Right. So this is the first time you've been the release manager for Django, is that correct?
I started volunteering for the last release, 1.6, but unfortunately the company I was working for got acquired at the time. So it was somewhat of a busy period for me and I kind of dropped out. But yeah, this is the first time I'm actually sort of going fully through with it.
Okay, and have you been talking to James a lot about the process? So, and I assume you've been collaborating with him in the past about the release process.
Well, James is still heavily involved. James is the person who still, he still cuts our releases and things and does the packaging and the signing and the uploading and stuff. So he's the one who, for example, actually physically rolled the alpha release of 1.7. He's still involved in that capacity, but I can coordinate with him and occasionally Jacob and people who have other signing ability to get that release out on time.
I was going to ask you about South as being the major thing in 1.7, but if there's anything more interesting to discuss about what's actually going into the release that made the 20th deadline.
For those not familiar, the alpha is the cutoff in Django for major new features. And usually we get one or two major new features, you know, it's all right. This time around, we have five major new features, which are schema migrations, which is basically south but in core with a few changes. We have the app loading refactor, which is change the fundamental way Django knows about how, what apps exist and how you configure them, which is sort of more groundwork, but will hopefully provide things like a dot ready signal you can overload in 1.7 for loading code on app startup. We have custom lookups in the ORM, so you can now define things like double underscore search or double underscore like list contains, and custom operators for if you have like Postgres and advanced field types, that kind of stuff, or your own special way of doing lookups. We have advanced prefetching, where you can now run prefetch related with filters, with custom query sets and all that kind of stuff. And we have a brand new validation and checks framework, so you can define custom ways to perform checks to make sure your app is correct. And we also have a lot more checks in Django, things like if we notice your tests aren't going to run properly under 1.7, we warn you and that kind of thing.
So amazing. That's quite a large number of things to be going in. I'm sure that there are a lot of complications. So has it been smooth with all of those large features that are going in? I mean, obviously you have a long history with the schema migrations.
So I think schema migrations was, I think, the first one to land of these, because it was going on during the 1.6 release pipeline as well. But
and it has been on the cards for quite a while.
For a very long time, exactly.
Am I correct in saying that you were resistant to merging with core in the beginning with South?
So, no, when I initially started, I think it was seven years ago now, which is kind of a long time to thinking about it, I just had South as this external thing. And at the time, the context was different. There were other competitors. Django Evolution was still very strong, for example.
Yeah.
And so as time's gone on, as I've become sort of the only competitor left, basically, there's still other ones, but South has kind of become the de facto default. I think it just sort of slowly became this thing that it would be inevitable it came into core. Me and the core devs started chatting about putting it into core two and a half years ago, I think, at least at this point. So it's been sort of a long process of realizing what's going on and trying to work out how it would work and what to do best.
Have a lot of people been involved with the actual getting it into core bit, or has that mainly been you?
The core coding itself has been a lot of me, but there's been a lot of support and help from some wonderful members of the community who aren't even core developers, just people who sit down, test it out, give me wonderful edge cases. I've had some amazing patches from community members. It's been a really good effort, I think. Obviously, because of the Kickstarter I did for that feature in particular, I have a lot more time to dedicate to it, but I am immensely grateful for all of the people who find the weird bugs, because I could spend 3 weeks sitting here just constantly and not find all the edge cases. So
yeah,
I think that's
yeah.
the most help.
Yeah. And so what have been the most interesting parts of getting it into core?
I had an initial plan, and it's been very useful that it's mostly worked as I initially planned it, which almost never happens with software. There's been a few niggles. So things like the swappable model. So that you can swap auth.user out for a different model. That wasn't really around when I first planned how to do this, you know, a while back. So working out how to fit that around sort of the conceptual model, because to backtrack a bit, the migration support in core is very different to South. It's been rethought and restructured quite a lot. And so fitting that kind of concept into this lovely clean model I made from scratch was a bit tricky, but fortunately I have finally got that round, so that's good.
Did you rewrite everything, or did you just take core bits of South?
It's basically an entire rewrite. Some of the concepts are very similar, so the idea of migrations per app, migrations are sort of in this, what's essentially a digraph or more of a tree structure, that you can have migrations from multiple branches. That the concepts also exist, but the code itself has been entirely refactored. South's code was 7 years old. I was, as always, a much worse programmer when I wrote it. You know, we were always developing. And Django itself has changed a lot in the intervening years. So it's been basically entirely refactored and entirely changed.
Well, that's really interesting. I didn't realise that. But you've blogged the whole process in quite a lot of detail after the Kickstarter, and say all of that design is all online.
That's right, yeah. One of my sort of things of transparency, because obviously this is crowdfunded by Kickstarter, I wanted some transparency in the process. So one of those things has been, I've been trying to blog. Initially it was weekly, but I couldn't keep that schedule up because not too much change that was interesting. But semi-fortnightly, just about what's changed, some technical details, what's going on, some reasons about why I'm doing it, giving a kind of context to people about what's going on and why.
Okay, so tell us about the other features, about app reloading. And this is a very fundamental shift. I think there won't be anything that a normal day-to-day Django user will see, but I think it's been a very serious refactor underneath.
That's right. And in fact, the app loading refactor concept has a very long and tumultuous history. There's been some kind of app loading refactor for at least 4 years now, and it's sort of gone through several phases of ownership and several design styles and several entire implementations. And so Aymeric, at the end of last year, just sat down and went, okay, I have a few weeks clear, let's do this. And to his credit, he just sat, he blasted through it and made, it's a much lightweight solution than was initially, than has been proposed before, but it is still very useful. The key problem was that Django tracked apps using some ORM code, which is obviously a bad way of doing it. Everything was model based, and so moving away from that has been a big thing for a while now, and I'm really glad it's finally landed.
Has that touched most of Django core?
It's certainly widespread. Anything that imported, you know, from django.db.models.loading, which is where the old app cache used to live, has had to be changed. Enumerating models has changed. Listing the apps you've got run installed has basically changed. So there's been a lot of sort of small lightweight touches to a lot of the core.
Are you expecting a lot of bugs to come out of this change?
We in fact have a major bug related to it in the alpha. That it won't fit everybody, but it currently in a combination of that and the model validation enforces that you have to have contrib.auth installed for certain things. So there are certainly bugs, but we're pretty sure we can iron them out by beta and by the release.
Not needing models.py will be very handy, though. Oh, a bit of a mental shift. The custom lookups.
So custom lookups is a feature that's been, again, banded around as an idea for a while, but it's finally come through as implementation. And basically what it is you can, previously Django, you can double underscore operators and filters, so like double underscore contains, double underscore I contains, for example, and now you can define your own custom ones of those. So if you've got, say, a Postgres array field type, which Django doesn't support by default, you can have a custom lookup for array contains subset, which in Postgres is a first class operator and it's indexable and things, so it's a really useful thing to have. So having that ability to run those as just dot filters rather than like dot extra or dot raw is going to be really useful for code cleanliness, I think. That was mostly ANSI implemented that, but I've looked through the patch and it looks, there's some nasty ORM bits in the middle there and some SQL fiddling, which is always a fun part of the process. But yeah, it seems to be working very well. Like I've not had a chance to play around with it too much, but I'm really happy that's in there.
Do you want to go through the other features as well? Are the advanced prefetching?
Yeah, no, advanced prefetching is, so basically prefetch related, as it landed originally, it fetches everything in the other end of the relationship. So it's, you know, just goes for everything. There's no filtering. And if you're trying to prefetch on, you know, say, I want to prefetch conferences that someone's attending, for example, in the Lanyard case, we had that at Lanyard, you couldn't do that. But now you can pass a custom sort of filtering to prefetch and say, okay, run the prefetch and only select things that match this filter constraint or match this other constraint. So it makes it a lot easier to do sort of one query, much quicker website responses with a lot less queries.
And much more efficient, which I think was one of the purposes of that as well. That's a feature I've wanted for a while.
I've wanted so long as well.
And validations is actually a new part of core?
That's right. So validation, which Rust's been working on, is essentially, it's a combination of an old feature and a new feature. So model validation, which wasn't there previously, did things like you must have max length on a char field and things like that. That's been rolled into this, as well as sort of more global checks on the project. So things like project structure, like, you know, your WYSIWYG file is the wrong format possibly, or so for example, one test I have seen is your tests are named wrongly and the test runner won't find them. So, you know, recently we've changed the test runner so it only finds tests in files called test underscore something. And so if Django now sees tests done in a different way that won't run, it will warn you at startup and go, by the way, we've triggered this warning. So it's more some much sort of global code quality and general advice thing that we can then use in releases to say, and to push things like deprecations and things in the release notes much more physically in a terminal so you don't get caught out by them.
Oh, so is there anything else interesting or complicated for the release?
Gosh, there's been so much to this release that I could probably go on for hours and hours, which wouldn't make for a very good podcast. Nothing comes to mind, certainly in terms of features. There's a lot of minor features as well, some of which are, there's a lot of sort of very pleasing features in here that you just go, I wanted that for ages and now it's finally here, you know.
I think this is finally the fruits of having a lot more core developers. Would that be the case, do you think?
I think it's a combination of that and just sort of a fortunate amount that quite a few core devs have come into a lot of free time in the last 6 months to a year, and so a lot of this stuff's come to fruition all at once, which is fantastic to see as well.
So what kind of a project would you recommend to testing out the alpha?
So I mean, my general perspective on this is, if you've got like a small personal website, so like my own website, I just port it over to try it out, see how that works. You know, it runs flawlessly in my case, and I'm happy to run on master because, you know, I'm managing it. But for other things, like if you have a big website, it's worth just trying out in development and seeing if anything breaks. And because obviously, like, the point of an alpha and beta is for you to tell us what bugs exist, and so we can't know about those bugs unless you tell us. So it's very useful, even if you don't release it in production, just to download 1.7 alpha, just try it out on a project you have lying around that you're currently working on and see what fails.
Is there any assistance that you're looking for?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing always at the forefront of my mind is people trying out migrations. South took 6 years of people testing it using production to iron out most of the bugs. So, you know, we absolutely need people to try out migrations, especially if they've got crazy schemas or crazy databases, please try them. File an issue in the migrations portion of our track. I look at it every day now. I'm trying to get fixes in on sort of almost a daily basis. So I really love to see people trying it out. And also, like, just reporting back how they feel about it. Like, try to improve the UI. Like, are there improvements that we could do otherwise in that sense? You know, just people's perspective on that. It's very easy to get locked into that mindset where you've just sat down and developed a feature and you've never used it sort of from a fresh start. So I'd love to have that kind of insight.
Well, I'm sure lots of people can find lots of interesting cases with it.
I hope so.
And so I've noticed that the roadmap has been updated quite regularly. Are you still on track to landing everything as you expect it to be?
We are only 3 days late, which for Django is almost a record, I think, at this point. Django has a long history of not hitting release dates, which is unfortunate. But I am fully intent that we will hit our release date, so fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. The middle of May, we're hoping to get it off the ground.
That's right. In fact, the release date is, I believe, coincidental with DjangoCon Europe, possibly on purpose.
The next minor release will be the beta. What's the plan for that?
So the beta is a phase where we do much more strong lockdown of features and minor features. So an alpha is a major feature cutoff, and beta is very much almost a feature freeze entirely. After beta, bug fixes are allowed, but at that point, beta is always, we split the Git branches into two. So currently 1.6 is still in the master Git branch. At the beta phase, we'll split off, say 1.7 even. The beta will split off 1.7 into its own stable branch called stable/1.7.x. And then from then on, all fixes go on to that branch separately and also on master if they are, depending how they fit. So it becomes a much more sort of stability and polishing phase, opposed to from now until beta is much more fixing the minor issues and minor feature sort of landing and that kind of stuff.
You said that it's going to coincide with DjangoCon Europe.
The idea was to have basically sort of that last polish phase around the sprint so we can get people involved in that and help show the resources to the community at large in a better sense.
Are you going to the upcoming conferences, the weekend in Cardiff and PyCon and DjangoCon? Can we expect to see you at any of those?
So I'm certainly at PyCon because I'm giving a talk there. I fully intend to go to DjangoCon Europe. I'm hoping to go to Django Weekend Cardiff. I am moving to the States sometime in February, hopefully. So it's kind of I'm not entirely sure, but it's looking like I can go. So fingers crossed I can.
Are you looking forward to the move to the States?
Yeah, it's the first time I've moved abroad, so it's going to be very interesting to do. But it's going to be an adventure, certainly.
And will you be working really hard once you get over there, or will you still have as much time to dedicate to Django?
I'll have less overhead, more free time. Currently, I've got some time sunk into things like talking to visa people and doing moving stuff. So hopefully when I'm over there, I'll have a little bit more free time. But free time is always precious.
And good luck with the move.
Thank you.
And good luck with the release.
Yeah, we'll see. Hopefully luck isn't required, but all we can get. Yeah, it's such a big release. It's going to be incredible, I think.
Yeah, an amazing amount of work.
Thank you very much. Bye.
And that was Andrew Godwin talking to me about the next Django release cycle and the major features that are going into it. I also talked to Russell Keith McGee. I started off by asking him about the new validations framework.
Okay, so the background to this validation framework is really that it's just a rewriting and a refactoring of one of the oldest pieces of Django. If you've ever sat down, written a model, done a SyncDB, and come back with the message that foreign key on model X is clashing with field on model Y, please add a related name field, or please add a related name definition. That's the validation framework at work. And that's been there pretty much since day one, or at least since Django's been an open source project anyway.
It's probably one of the first commands that everyone types in is manage.py validate.
Well, yeah, and if they're not running validate, they're running SyncDB or run server, which runs validate implicitly. The dirty little secret is that the implementation of validate.py is this 250-line monolithic block, which is this great big for loop with a bunch of if statements that nest about four deep. So it was really quite a messy little piece of internal code. Doing something was incredibly important and at this point was incredibly stable and, you know, reliable, but was a nightmare to maintain and completely unextensible. Why would you care about it being extensible? Well, the principal thing is that there are a lot of things that we would be in a position to identify as being a problem, but that Django didn't have the internal mechanism to allow us to actually check it. So, for example, Django's core has gone to great lengths to make sure that it doesn't have any dependencies on contrib. So contrib is supposed to be, you could cut off that tree and it would run quite happily. It's not quite true. There's a couple of places where we violate that. But if you do, for example, use a generic foreign key, there are a number of things that we could potentially check in terms of making sure you're actually pointing to a foreign key and this field actually does exist and so on and so forth. But those checks actually aren't performed by Validate, because they can't be performed by Validate because Validate is in core and generic foreign keys are part of Contrib. So by extension, there's a whole bunch of other things that are in that same sort of space. There are checks that we would like to be able to perform and checks that we would like to be able to say to the end user community, hey, you're building yourself a custom field. You want to validate something. Now you've got a mechanism for validating. And that's what this new framework does at its core. It's essentially taking the old set of validation checks and instead of doing them as one great big 250-line call, factors it out to say, okay, well, go and iterate over every model. Ask every model to iterate over every field and then provide an extension point on the model and on the field where you can define additional checks. Now, that was the original kind of, you know, motivation of, we've got this great big method, let's refactor it and actually make it extensible for end users. But what we've been able to do along the way is add the capability for a whole bunch of additional features, or at least rationalize the way some other pieces sort of validation and checking have performed. So, for example, model admin, when you define an admin, you include admin in your project, admin had its own set of internal checks to make sure the model admin objects were all correctly defined, to make sure that, you know, your list filter contained the names of actual fields that could be filtered and your list display contained the names of actual fields that could be displayed and so on. That was done in a completely ad hoc fashion by admin internally. Admin did it its own way. What we're now able to do is say, okay, well, we're going to go and ask every app, have you got any additional checks that you want to perform? And admin can say, oh, yes, I do. I need to check these things over here. So this all then ties in nicely with the app refactor, because the app refactor gives us, or the app loading changes, gives us an entry point where we can say, okay, on startup, register all the checks that you want to perform as an app. And admin says, I need to perform these checks. And Contrib says, content type says, I need to perform these checks. Auth says, I need to perform these checks.
Perhaps it's part of the eating your own dog food mission that everyone's on for admin as well.
Exactly. And then so hopefully this is the next step, or the hope, the things we're sort of hoping to add along to this. In 1.6, we added this thing called the check command, which was independent of validate and essentially was there to add to say, okay, when you upgrade from Django 1.5 to Django 1.6, there are a couple things that change that might bite you, changes in Boolean fields, changes to the test runner. We're going to provide a mechanism to identify if that's likely to be a problem. We can now integrate that with the validation check. So the first time you upgrade to Django 1.7, the first time you run SyncDB, you're going to get a warning about all the things that are potentially a problem as a result of that upgrade. And sort of in the next step, the further beyond that, this was originally part of the idea behind the Summer of Code. We didn't quite get to finish it in time, is to go and integrate sort of security checks, things that aren't the validation framework at the moment can only raise errors. You know, if you don't have a related name, it is an error, therefore we're going to stop you from running. We now have the ability to raise warnings and info level messages as well, the same way as you would in any sort of debug framework. So we can provide at a system level advisories to say, well, by the way, that foreign key doesn't have a database index defined. Are you sure? Because that's probably going to be a performance issue. Well, this field, you've got choices defined, but you don't have a DB index defined. So there's a potential performance problem there. We can also add in checks for things like security. You know, your site doesn't appear to be defining HTTP-only cookies. That may be a problem. Are you sure that you don't want to just go and define a HTTP-only cookie? Or you don't have the clickjacking middleware enabled? That's probably not a good idea. It's not something we can canonically say, this site is not working, but it's an advisory we can provide to say, hey, by the way, maybe you want to take a look at this.
Oh, that's cool. Because I haven't even known what to call it. Validation tools or framework.
The name change is actually a key part of it, because we're now calling it system check framework, specifically because there's about four things that are called validation. So this is now, we managed to remove one of the things called validation in Django and give it a different name, which is a good thing.
You mentioned that a lot of this work had been done through the Google Summer of Code. Who did this work and how did that come about?
So this project, although, you know, I sort of get the final commit credit, that's really just me kind of taking a lot of work that was done by a Summer of Code student, Christopher Madrela, who's a guy in Poland, who was engaged in the Summer of Code. So for those who don't know, the Google Summer of Code is a project or program that's run by Google, or by the Open Source Office inside Google, where they essentially offer scholarships to open source projects and students to say, okay, well, we like open source, we like people contributing to open source, and we'd like to give students summer internship type positions. But inside Google, we haven't got the resources to manage this. But there are lots of open source projects that need contributions, and we're happy to fund that. So we go through a process. It starts each year around March, where Google says, okay, organizations who have a need for open source contributors, let us know. And Django has been a participant for 7 years, I think, at this point.
Have you always been involved with that process?
I think I missed the first year, but I've been every year since that. I've been officially been a mentor, and I've actually mentored a project in all bar one of those years.
Wow, how many people tend to be involved? How many projects do you have get going per year?
Django, we usually pick up between 2 and 4, depending upon how many applicants we get and how good the applicants are, and also on our end, how many people have got the spare time, because it's a fairly substantial time commitment. Every week you've got to meet the student and talk about what's going on, answer all the questions on mailing lists, and do a proper mentor type role over the course of the summer. So,
because you said Alex Gaynor came through this.
Alex was a contributor to Django before he was a Summer of Code student. But Alex actually did 2 Summer of Code projects. First one was multi-database support, which obviously massively advanced Django's usefulness in enterprise type situations. And then next year he actually did a deep dive into what changes would need to be made to make Django's ORM NoSQL compliant, for want of a better description.
Oh, okay.
Essentially, he did the background mechanics to make a MongoDB backend for Django's ORM, which worked at the end of the project, but there were a couple of architectural problems that needed to be answered, so that's why that hasn't actually gone anywhere. And a lot of the Django core team have lost their enthusiasm for NoSQL.
So is any of that work involved with Django NoRel?
No, completely separate project.
Oh, okay.
Separate project. So, yeah, he did a complete clean room, let's see what we've got to do to modify the ORM. And it was mostly taking a few last little vestiges of actual genuine SQL in the ORM layer and pushing them one stack deeper into the SQL backend of the ORM, which is theoretically where it should be, but, given that we've only got a SQL backend, sometimes things leak a little bit.
There'd be dragons, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So the project, essentially, the way it works is that a student, or organisations like Django apply, Google accepts the applications, then we put out a call for students, usually around sort of the March timeframe. The students write a form application. This is the project I'm going to work on. They've got to give a 12-week timeline that says this is how long it's going, this is what I'm going to do. And it's got to be a fairly detailed timeline as well. It's got to have very distinct, you are meeting your performance, you are actually getting to where you think you're going to get in this project type deadlines in it. We have a discovery. We usually get 15 or 20 odd applications. About 10 of those can be discarded as just complete spam. And then we're left with 10 that are varying degrees of good or bad. And we pick the ones that we like, and then they end up being students. Those students then go on a 12-week project. There's a midterm sort of report and then a final report. And the end of that, hopefully, we end up with a feature or a set of changes that we can commit to Django as a major feature. And that's exactly what Christopher did over the course of this last summer. He worked from April to August timeframe, produced a bunch of code. Then I sat on it for a little bit, waited a little bit longer than I probably should have. And then last weekend, actually physically committed it, ready for 1.7.
So anyone who's interested in doing a Google Summer of Code project?
Anyone who is essentially, if you are enrolled in a university course, you are eligible to apply. So I heartily encourage you to. And although it's called the Summer of Code because it's the US Northern Summer, but we have fielded people from Southern Hemisphere and with, even in Europe, the dates of the program usually overlap with European exams at some point. But we have a certain amount of flexibility with that, as long as we know what it is you are or aren't going to be available for. So, and it's a paid program as well. So the students, last year was a $4,000 stipend for the student to engage in writing open source and building their resume, essentially. And Django as a project, it's a $500 stipend to kind of thank you for your time from Google. But that's sort of more of a token thing than anything else. Yeah, deeply appreciated token, by the way.
Awesome. Well, there's one other thing I wanted to talk to you about that you'd mentioned that's completely unrelated is about the fact that there is new Django merchandise available. Now, this has been limited in the past, from what I can understand, by Django's trademark. And there was a lot of activity with the trademark last year, is that correct? Which has changed the game for this.
Yes. So the problem that we've got is that Django has a trademark. We have a registered trademark in the United States. And one of the things that we need to do in order to have a trademark is defend the trademark. And that then becomes a problem because as an open source project, we don't want to stop people from using the Django trademark, but we kind of at some level have to, because if it's a free-for-all, then it's not a trademark. We're not actually using it in trade. So when I took over as the president of the Django Software Foundation about 3 years ago, one of the first things that I wanted to try and get sorted is we need to settle this. We need to make sure that people can actually use the trademark in practice.
Buy Django t-shirts.
but to sell Django t-shirts, because it was actually illegal. Unless you actually had permission to use the trademark, you really shouldn't have been using the trademark.
Yeah.
So that's essentially what we set up. And at DjangoCon US last year, in my keynote, I was able to announce that we actually now have a formal trademark policy, which is essentially puts you in a position where if you are someone who does want to produce merchandise, T-shirts, bags, whatever, with a Django logo on it, you now can. There is a formal process you can go through for doing that. Essentially, it's for in the case of things like T-shirts and merchandise, it's you need to submit the artwork to the DSF, and the DSF says, yes, that artwork is an offensive or a problem for the DSF. In the case of other things like books and user groups and whatnot, there are other rules. DjangoProject.com/trademarks is the full URL of the trademark policy. It's designed to be easy to use. The only one you really need permission for is producing merchandise. And, yeah, we've now had a couple of organizations step up and say, yeah, we want to produce Django merchandise and sell it. Here's what we're going to produce. They've submitted the artwork. We've said yes. And now there are companies where you can go and give your hard-earned money to get yourself a shirt with Django.
Oh, excellent. So hear ye, everyone with your Django T-shirt ideas, everyone out there, now is the time.
Yes, exactly. And also, just as a side note, that actually doesn't preclude the DSF from doing anything either. So, you know, I have the DjangoCon AU T-shirt last year was essentially done as a fundraiser because we were sort of the AU conference is organised as a mini conference type the side of PyCon AU. As a result, we didn't have funds to pay for a T-shirt out of conference funds, so we did it as a fundraiser. And I'd very much like to do a similar sort of thing for just Django T-shirts in general. Here is the summer 2014 Django shirt, and you know, get artwork from the community and actually do some fundraising stuff on that. But that's mostly held up at the moment because I don't have an artistic bone in my body, and I need people who do to help me.
And
if you are so inclined,
I can go easily or strongly on the ponies, depending on your inclination.
Yeah, I suspect ponies might get slightly kiboshed by certain members of the DSF, who just mentioned Romain Adrian. But yes.
But who are no longer BDFL, so...
They're no longer BDFL, but he is still a member of the board of the DSF.
And does still feel strongly about the ponies.
He definitely still feels strongly about ponies, so...
Well, hopefully anybody who has any ideas for any Django merchandise will come forward with their artistic abilities. All those designer developers out there with your secret talents.
We certainly live in hope, yes.
Thank you so much for talking to me again.
Thanks for letting me rabbit on.
And that was Russell Keith McGee, Django Software Foundation President and Django Core Developer. In other non-Django release news... Some non-Django recent releases to be aware of are: on the 29th of December, Sentry released version 6.4.4. On the 1st of January, Pillow released version 2.3.0. On the 7th of January, Django Debug Toolbar released 1.0.1 and Django Extensions released 1.3.0. If you use any of those commonly used non-Django Python applications, you may consider upgrading them. And they were Sentry, Pillow, Django Debug Toolbar, and Django Extensions. News. There were no official news items from the Django blog this month, but there was one fairly large bit of unofficial news, perhaps one of the bigger bits of unofficial news in recent times. Adrian and Jacob are retiring as Django BDFLs. This was written by Adrian Holovardi on the 13th of January 2014. Adrian said, "Since July 2005, when Django was open-sourced, Jacob Kaplan-Moss and I have been the two benevolent dictators for life, BDFLs, of the project. Today we're both retiring from our formal BDFL roles, given that 1, we don't have the time for it that we once had, and 2, Django is in great shape with a vibrant community of contributors." He says, "If you're a Django user, though, have no fear. Honestly, this title seems like a big change on paper, but in reality, you won't have to change much." Jacob also wrote a blog post, and he started with a quote from the DAO of the Internet Engineering Task Force, the IETF. The quote is, "We reject kings, presidents, and voting. We believe in rough consensus and running code." He goes on to say, "For me, this has been a long time coming. I've been thinking about this for at least a year. This is similar to a lot of changes we've made over the years. It's a formalization and a naming of what's already happened." It's worth checking out their posts, and we're so grateful to them for having been our leaders over the years. And I think this goes to show how strong and humble and dedicated and honest our community is, and particularly the leaders of our community are. This perhaps is one of the elements that makes the Django project as strong as it is. And informally, I think that Adrian and Jacob will always unofficially be the BDFLs of Django. We thank them for their leadership over the years. In other news, On the 10th of January, Audrey Roy tweeted that at the end of 2013, she married Pi Danny. You may know these guys as major contributors to the Django community. They met through the PyCon Diversity Grant of 2010 that Audrey received. Since then, they've made some notable contributions to the Python and Django communities. Audrey is the founder of Pi Ladies. Between them, they've co-authored the book Two Scoops of Django, which they may be best known for in recent times. They're also responsible for the Django Packages website, as well as both the Python Cookie Cutter and Django Cookie Cutter projects on GitHub. They've also keynoted several conferences. They work tirelessly to contribute to the Django community and blogs and talks and organising events and generally supporting people coming into the community. And we wish all the best to them. I believe that they're now going to be going by the surname, both of them, Roy Greenfield. This news has not stopped them from being their usual prolific and generous selves. Several days after they tweeted about their marriage, they tweeted that the very first proofs of two scoops of Django for 1.6 were going to arrive to them shortly. We're really looking forward to that release. And when I asked them whether or not two scoops of Django for 1.6 will be out in the next few weeks, they said it's pretty likely. There was another Django tutorial Kickstarter that was successfully funded on the 15th of January. This project went by the name of Real Python, Advanced Web Development Featuring Django 1.6 by Jeremy Johnson. This project was quite successful. They had an initial funding goal of $3,500 and they successfully raised $50,001, that's $50,001, from 1,446 backers. This project is for students, developers, entrepreneurs, and really anyone who wants to learn web development best practices via Python and Django 1.6 in order to start developing their own web development projects. Their technologies they're covering are Python, Django, Heroku, Git, HTML5, CSS, JavaScript, jQuery, MongoDB, Postgres, SQL, GitHub, Bootstrap 3, REST, AJAX, Vim, Selenium, etc. The Real Python team has successfully delivered two Kickstarter projects before. This is the second Django Tutorials Kickstarter that has been successfully funded. There was one in September 2012 by Kenneth Love, where of his $5,000 goal, he successfully raised $13,354. In conference news, there are two conference-style Django events coming up in the near future, and I spoke about both of these with one of their key organisers and Django core member. I'm talking to... Is your surname pronounced Procida? Is that correct?
It's pronounced Procida.
Procida. Oh, I'm going to struggle with that. But I'll try my best. I'm talking to Daniele Procida about the Django Weekend in Cardiff. Hello, Daniele.
Hi, Elena. So Django Weekend Cardiff is going to be the first Django conference ever in the United Kingdom, and I think the first Python event in Wales. It's a three-day event, the 7th, 8th, and 9th of February this year at Cardiff University. So we have an open day to which we're inviting the public to try and raise the profile of Python and Django locally.
Have you had much interest in that?
It's growing. We've had a lot of interest from within the university because we've got a stream of Python in science talks, and we also have a stream of Django at work talks. So we're trying to reach different audiences there. We're trying to get some school kids into the Python in Science talks, which are being delivered by some internationally known researchers and also by first year undergraduates doing their first work with Python. So there's quite an interesting spread of speakers for that.
Then that's on the public day.
That's on the public open day, yeah. So everything's free. There are also a number of Python and Django tutorials. So all in all, we've got something like 16 different events on that open day.
Wow, that's impressive.
Well, I'm quite pleased with that. Yes, I think that's going to be quite good at giving people locally a taste of what it is that we do in our work and at our conferences.
Oh, that should be great. And I'll be very interested to hear what the public response will be to that, because, you know, there is more of an awareness now than there ever has been before about these technologies and an interest from the general public.
That's absolutely true. But it's also true that Wales is, it would be unfair to call it a backwater, but certainly it's not doing too well in open source software. So to give you an example, in September, I went to PyCon UK, the annual UK Python conference, and of 290 people, there were only three from Wales. Wales is, for me, it was a 3 hours by train. So there were more people from Poland than there were from Wales.
Well, I'm sure hopefully this event will turn that around.
I hope so. So next year when I go to PyCon UK, I hope there'll be a lot more people from Wales.
And for the other days of the weekend, what's going to be happening?
The second day, the Saturday, is a day of talks and of the kind that people are familiar with at DjangoCons and PyCons. And again, we have had proposals of talks from across the world. We've got 12 talks and an hour of lightning talks, so we've crammed them all in. We're going to keep them coming. We're going to keep them short and fast. And that's a really nice lineup. All the details are on our website. They cover the entire spread of Python and Django interests.
Right, and you're saying that those days are sold out now, is that correct?
Oh, yes. The tickets sold out extremely quickly. In fact, the original idea was for a conference of 50 people, which grew to 60 and is now 130. We sold out the first tickets in 3 weeks, and then when I decided to double it in size, the remaining tickets sold out in just 2 weeks over Christmas. So there's been a tremendous interest, and we've got people coming from all over the world, actually. So that's really pleasing that they're coming to Cardiff.
That's excellent. And so what talks are you most looking forward to?
There are some that are going to be really interesting. For example, we had a proposal from a researcher in the School of Mathematics here at Cardiff University, who is also working with one of the health boards in South Wales. And she has used Python and Markov chains, which are a mathematical construct that are very useful for modelling real-world processes, to analyse how policies in critical care units will affect resource allocation and patient throughput. So this is a very interesting application of mathematics and Python to a real problem in the real world.
So can people still be involved? Are people still welcome?
People are absolutely welcome to the open day. We'd like to have as many people as possible, and everyone, whoever they are, is welcome to come to that, because it is genuinely an open day where we want to invite the public to come and see what we do.
That's excellent. And you seem to have gotten a lot of sponsors too.
Yes, this is the lovely thing about the Python and Django communities, that so many of the organizations that are involved are actually part of the community, that they are involved, they support the community, they contribute to the software. So they're giving a lot. Their sponsorship is very welcome, but actually most of these sponsors are involved in contributing in other ways all through the year. And it was very pleasing to have such a response from them.
Particularly seeing as it's an inaugural event, to have so many sponsors immediately come forward.
It's an inaugural event, and the sponsors have come from across the world. So more than half of our sponsorship is from abroad.
Well, you do have a very nice looking website, I must say.
Thank you.
Is there anything else you'd like to mention about the weekend?
I think if people want to go and have a look at the website, djangoweekend.org, they'll find all the information they'll need to know. I hope that this is going to be the first Django Weekend, and that actually it will contribute to open source software in Wales and in the UK, and that next year we'll be building on this year.
Well, considering the popularity that you received and how much you oversold the conference, I think that there's a lot of potential in the future for this sort of format, by the looks of things. Oh, and you will be having a sprint, so the sprint will be on the third day, is that correct?
Yes, we'll have code sprints and clinics. So clinics, people know what sprints are already, where it's a chance to collaborate in person with other people on these open source projects. And we've got various people offering clinics to help with some particular piece of software or a problem in software, such as testing. So that's going to be that's another reason that we've given people to stay for all 3 days and not to shoot off home after the talks. So of our 130 or so visitors, about 80 are staying for the sprints, which is a huge number.
And I noticed that you're doing a Don't Be Afraid to Commit clinic, which I believe you're giving a couple of times in the near future.
That's right. I run a Don't Be Afraid to Commit workshop, which is aimed at getting new contributors to Python or Django projects up and running, so they're familiar with things like GitHub and the various processes they need to work through. So I'll be doing that on the Friday and of the conference. I'm doing it later in the month on the weekend of the 22nd. I've been invited very kindly to do it in Amsterdam for a Django sprint over the weekend there. Eric Romin got in touch with me and invited me, and I'm really looking forward to that.
You're involved with organising the Django Island conference in May.
So this is DjangoCon Europe, which happens every year. And last year was in Warsaw, and this year is on a tiny little island off the coast of the south of France, the Île des Imbiers. And it's going to be quite something, I think, because I understand we're going to have the island pretty much to ourselves. It's a nature reserve. There are some hotels there and beaches and vineyards and so on. And it's going to become a Django island for 5 days or so.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Will there be many other activities organised around the conference, do you know?
I think the most significant thing about this one that's not been done before is that people are invited to bring their partners and families along. So you can have your ticket and then for pretty much a nominal extra charge, have your partner with you. Because this is a place where people would go for holidays or to this island. And even children are welcome. So in terms of welcoming a wider public, it seems to be doing something similar to what we're doing with the Django weekend, in the sense that it's inviting in new people, not necessarily to be hardcore parts of the community, but to be involved in it and part of that family.
So the tickets for this are currently available, and there is the call for speakers out at the moment.
Yes, there's a call for speakers, and I think potential speakers need to act fast, because I believe the deadline is either the end of January or the beginning of February.
Oh gosh, and it's one well worth getting to. And early bird tickets are available at the moment too.
No, early bird tickets sold out very quickly. I think all the tickets are going to sell out very quickly, because there is just one ticket to pay for everything for this event. Your ticket includes your accommodation and all of your meals as well.
So the conference goes 5 days, is that right?
Yes, there'll be 3 days of talks from the 13th to the 15th of May, and then the 16th and 17th will be code sprints. I think it's going to be an absolutely wonderful experience. And if someone's wondering whether to attend a DjangoCon for the first time, then take this opportunity, because this is going to be really something to remember.
Well, I must say, I agree wholeheartedly.
If you're in Europe, yeah, you know, the south of France in May is a pretty lovely place to be.
So that it has the reputation. Oh, I wish I could be there. All right, well, thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you, Elena. It's been very nice to talk to you as well. Speak to you again.
And that was Daniela Procida talking to me about the upcoming events in Europe, Django Weekend in Cardiff, to be held from the 5th to the 7th of February, and the upcoming DjangoCon in Europe in May. There is one other Django event coming up shortly, and that's also in Europe, and that's going to be held in Amsterdam on the 22nd of February. And this was announced on the Django blog on the 23rd of January and is being organised by Eric Romin. It will be a 2-day sprint that's going to take place in the offices of Travelbird in the centre of Amsterdam. It'll start on Saturday, February the 22nd at 10 a.m. and finish on the Sunday at 10 p.m. The first beta for Django 7 should be coming out shortly after the sprint, so during the sprint they'll no doubt be contributing to bug fixes for that release. If you're unable to come to Amsterdam, you're welcome to contribute to the sprint online. The sprint and core developers will be available in the Django Sprint IRC channel on Freenode. So if you've got nothing going on for that weekend of the 22nd, by all means, jump on IRC and check into the #Django-Sprint IRC channel and see what's going on. In addition to these conference-style events, there are a handful of Django meetups that are being held around the world. I'm going to briefly run through these. Listen out for your city. These are being listed in chronological order. In Seattle, on the 30th of January, which is Thursday at 5 p.m. at Espresso Vivace Alley 24 in Seattle. Apparently this is a weekly sprint, so head down on any Thursday. in Houston on the 3rd of February, which is a Monday at 7 p.m. at the Stag's Head Pub in Houston. In Dallas on the 4th of February, which is a Tuesday at 7 p.m. at Reward Style in Dallas. In Israel, Melbourne or Bogota on the 6th of February, which is a Thursday. At 4:45 at the Desti offices in Tel Aviv, at 6 p.m. at Common Code in Abbotsford in Melbourne, and at 6 p.m. in Atom House in Bogota. And there are 37 people going to the Bogota event, and there are 65 people who have RSVP'd already for the Tel Aviv event. If you're in Phoenix on the 8th of February, which is a Saturday, starting at 11 a.m. at Local Motors in Chandler. If you're in Silicon Valley on the 12th of February, which is Wednesday at 5:30 at Webnersia in San Jose. If you're in Los Angeles or Berlin on the 18th of February, which is a Tuesday at around 7 at MetaCloud in Pasadena in LA, and the Berlin event still needs a location, though Yannis Lydell is involved, and that'd be well worth following. So if you're in Berlin, track down the location of that event for the 18th of February. If you're in St. Paul, Minneapolis on the 19th of February, which is Wednesday at 7 p.m. at Common Roots Cafe in Minneapolis. If you're in Shanghai on the 20th of February, which is Thursday at 7 p.m. at Lighthouse in the Jingan District, this is the inaugural Django meetup for Shanghai, and there are 6 attendees so far. If you are involved with the Bath and Bristol Django Users Group, they'll be having an event at Potato in Bristol. They haven't quite decided on the date yet, but it's probably going to be February the 20th. So go check out their Doodle page where they're still deciding on the date. And of course, there's the Amsterdam Sprints on the 22nd of February. Other upcoming events are on April the 9th is PyCon 2014, going to be held in Montreal, Canada. You can still register for this, and the tutorials are selling out quickly. DjangoCon Europe. There is the DjangoCon Ireland event happening on the 13th to the 17th of May. It's going to be held on the L'Île des Embiers, which is located on the Côte d'Azur between Toulon and Marseille. Tickets are available for this, and Early Bird have already sold out. This event will probably be amazing, so organise to get to it as soon as you can. In July 21st to 27th will be EuroPython, which is going to be held in Berlin. From August 1st to the 5th, 2014, will be PyCon Australia, to be held in Brisbane. And DjangoCon 2014 will be held in Portland, Oregon, on the Labor Day weekend in September of 2014. And remember, if you can't get down to any of the conferences, chase up the videos. PyVideo.org tends to have a lot of the Django videos, but just check them out on YouTube. Things you can do. Requests and community call-outs. So here are some things that have come up in the community that they're looking for help with. So firstly are some technical things that have been mentioned that developers in the community have come out and asked for help for. Andrew Godwin has asked for people to bring out their interesting schema migrations, Django 1.7 alpha and beta. As he said in the interview, he's looking specifically for interesting large production and exotic use cases that he can use for debugging to try and find all of the bugs, and is also interested in getting any feedback about making the UI more intuitive, the error messages better. Please provide your feedback. Also, for the 1.7 release, ANSI, he asked in the thread from January the 12th that people have a go at the new custom lookup classes and writing about your experiences. These seem quite easy to implement. You just say from django.db.models import lookup or extract, and then you can define your custom model, and then you just register it, and then you can use that custom lookup. It looks pretty straightforward. So take it out for a spin and write about your experiences. For non-technical community help, we're looking for people with creative ability to make your Django merchandise dreams a reality for the DSF. So if you have any visual art skills, or just if you've had any ideas about Django t-shirts or any kind of Django merchandise or anything with a Django logo on it, now is your chance. The DSF is looking for artwork to emblazon on things and sell for fundraising for the DSF. So if you have any ideas, or you've done any work, or you've got any ideas or files lying around, just email foundation@djangoproject.com. Also, if you would like to be mentioned here, if you have any community requests or for volunteers or support or sponsorship or help with projects, just email scoop@djangoproject.com and it'll be posted here and on the Django blog in the update email. Talking about the update email, some other updates that have happened. There's a new series of posts from PyDanny about using PyTest. So if you're using PyTest or interested in using it, this series of posts could be interesting for you. Also, thanks to Curtis Maloney, did you know, as of 1.6, Django supports persistent database backends. They're disabled by default, but they can be enabled on a per database basis in your database's settings. Turning this on can save you some time at the beginning of every single request. The amount of time that you save varies depending on a range of different factors, but you can get a saving of up to half a second by turning on the persistent database connections. See the docs for more details. Did you know that you can use F expressions not just in filter statements, which is the normal use case, but you can use F expressions in your model field? There are some cool examples for this. You can check out the documentation, just search using the term, updating attributes based on existing fields. Also, these show notes are online and they're open sourced on GitHub, so if there's anything that's incorrect or you'd like to make any additions or you would like to make any comments at all, these notes are at github.com/Elena, that's E-L-E-N-A, /Django-news-podcast. Also, the show itself is a community effort, so if you would like to be part of the show, just before I record it, I put up a template of all of the show notes and then work through playing fill in the blanks. And if you would like to record and edit any of these segments or any relevant interviews that are within the format, then I would be delighted to include them with the show. I really aspire to make this podcast a completely community-based effort. So that's it for the main news part of the Django Django News and Updates podcast. Stick around, or don't, for the summary of Django Dev for this month. I'm Elena Williams. So, lastly, is the summary of the Django Dev mailing list for the last 28 days. This is a very brief and loose summary of what was discussed on the Django development mailing list during the last 28 days to the 26th of January 2014, excluding announcements and support inquiries and emails I just decided not to include because it was either too hard to explain, too irrelevant, or too short. So the purpose of this section is to provide a summary of what's been discussed in case something you're particularly interested in has popped up in Django Dev this month. So this is very much a summary, lacking in context, quite incomplete, and potentially entirely erroneous. So please read and contribute to the actual threads if there's anything mentioned that's interesting to you. Now, with that disclaimer out of the way, this last few weeks was dominated by talk about the new release features, of course, particularly the big five going into 1.7, which are schema migrations, the app refactor, custom lookups, advanced prefetching, and the validations. Starting at app reloading, the very long now app reloading reloaded post by Amarik is now at 47 posts. Amarik has very publicly been working on the app reloading refactor, and he's given the detailed start, regular updates, and a slew of code improvements. The last of this post was mainly cleared up at the end of last month, but there have been a few additions to the thread with some debugging that has popped up with some errors when in testing. But really, the main heat is off this particular thread now, but it's an excellent documentation of the whole entire process. So this is an interesting one. This is a post by Daniel Sokolovsky that was actually posted on the 22nd of December 2011, asking about where to define signals for an app, which is one of the main things that's being resolved in the app refactor. Back then, the word from Russell Keith McGee was that the root problem is that there isn't a single reliable place to put app startup logic. With the current way that Django handles apps, there isn't a single solution that works everywhere. Though, this thread has been re-dug up now, well over a year later, on the 15th of January, and Amarik could promptly state in response that it's fixed in 1.7, and points to both signals in the docs and to the app refactored commits and discussions. Also, for the record, as at 1.7, there is an official Django way of where to put signals, where to put handlers, and where to wire them up, and how to test all that stuff. There's a commit from Amarik, and it's called Updated Advice on Connecting Signals at Startup. So once again, there is official documentation on how and where is the official way to load Django signals. Just go look it up. Amarik has written a post called Updated Advice on Connecting Signals at Startup. There was a delightful thread called Renaming Apps Has Underscore App, posted by Amarik Augustin on the 7th of January. And this is about one of the hardest problems there is in software, which is naming things. He says, during the app loading refactor, I introduced a method to test if a given application is enabled, and I named it has_app. He says, its main uses are detecting misconfigurations and skipping tests. But he reckons that the name is no good. So there was a big discussion. They tried .install, .has_app, .has_installed, .have_installed, and I think that they've settled on .is_installed for this particular method. Another thread that related to the app refactor was called Forbidding Double Import, and this was posted on the 7th of January by Amaric Augustin also. And he says that up to Django 1.4, every Django project was vulnerable to the double import problem. Since Python path contained both the directory and its parent, the same module could get imported twice through different paths. As of Django 1.6, there's actually no built-in support for setting the Python path like that. However, some users may still be setting it manually to avoid fixing their imports. Django still contains some ad hoc mechanisms to work around the consequences of this poor setup, notably model base, the metal class for model, defining a class that inherits from model that can return an existing class instead of creating a new one. He says that as part of the app refactor, he would like to replace this behavior in model base. He said he'd be inclined to do it immediately because it shouldn't be too hard, but not being backwards compatible, he says that he could create a deprecation path that goes through to 1.9. As the incompatible behavior predates Django 1.4, which is the long-term support edition, the general consensus on this thread was to kill double imports with fire. In terms of the schema migrations feature in 1.7, there are a handful of threads that came up on the list. One was quite a long thread posted by Brian Neal. The last discussion for this was on the 25th of January, and it's called 1.7 Schema Migrations and Auth Profile Module / get_profile Methods Deprecation. And the essence of this thread is that he could think up a use case where Auth Profile Model is being deprecated in 1.7, but the migrations don't support this setting, so you can't migrate your old Auth Profile Module. The discussion is basically threshing out whether or not this is needed, and nothing's probably going to change. Another thread was posted by Michael Manfrey on the 23rd of January. And the name of the thread is, Must a Django Database Support Migrations? And this is an interesting discussion about whether or not a database has to support migrations. He says that the scenario that prompted this ticket is that his primary project won't use Django for migrations because it interfaces with a legacy database with other tools in a DBA that manage the database schema. The able to support schema migrations bits relates to NoSQL, which doesn't necessarily have a strict schema. This conversation may come down to what the definition of fully supported Django backend means, and there's a lot of discussion on it. There is a thread called Migrations and Swappable Models / Auth User Model, and the last post in this was on the 12th of January by Andrew Godwin. This is a long and technically deep discussion about some of the specific intricacies of applying a swappable models migrations. Swappable models are an interesting and powerful feature that has actually been previously removed from Django, and I believe they were one of the last moving parts of migrations to be put in. There was a thread posted by Antsy Kranen on the 12th of January about class-based lookups. Basically, he was announcing that he'd put in the pull request for ticket number 16187. Basically, he's saying that the feature's in, but the documentation needs work. So, as I mentioned in the earlier section, by all means, take 1.7a out for a spin. Give class-based lookups a go. They seem quite easy to implement. And see if you can explain to everybody else how they work. Concerning the new system checks and validations framework, there was a long thread that was started recently by Russell Keith McGee, and it starts off, First off, this isn't critical for 1.7 alpha. I'm raising it now because I've been in this space for the last couple of days as a result of working on the checks framework. He says that Amarik's done a great job with app reloading and Russell didn't get a chance to follow it, and that the results of the work have been a pleasure to work with, he says, with one exception. He says, we've now got app config objects for each app, e.g. contrib.admin, and those app config objects have a ready method that invokes startup logic. That's all great stuff, and it's been a long time in coming, he says, but from a backwards compatibility perspective, there seems to be a big gap in the way that app config objects are instantiated. And this goes on like this for several thousand more words and 24 posts. To be perfectly honest, I don't really understand what's going on. It seems to be a technical discussion on the way that app config instantiates its startup logic. You're welcome to try and understand it if you'd like to. Moving on to some other interesting stuff that was discussed, there was a post called Feature Request Pre/Post-Commit Rollback Signals by Jesus Espino on the 19th of January. This relates to ticket 21803 called Support Post-Commit Hooks, which is a new feature request. So basically this is about attaching some code when a transaction is committed or rolled back. This is pretty complicated. A couple of other projects have been written to deal with this, but the most notable so far is one by that Carl Meyer mentions, and it's at Django-transaction-hooks. R.T. Karanen says that there's a case for abuse of this kind of hook for doing something business critical in the post-commit hook, and so it must be clear that this is not a substitute for a two-phase commit or other ways of avoiding crash after commit problems. So there's an update on the thread about improving aggregate support, which is ticket number 14030, which is allowing more complex expressions in aggregates. This has been ongoing work, it's been on the cards for 3 years now, and it's still going. Another discussion that was had was about recommending a Python 3 compatible MySQL connector. This conversation's been around since June last year. Oh, and the thread is described as being, to claim first-class Python 3 support in Django 1.6, we need to recommend a MySQL connector that works. It was discussed a few times on the mailing list. Now it's time to make a decision. So basically they picked one, but there seems to be complications involving the GPL, and then Oracle got involved, and then the water was extremely muddied by the fact that MySQL is also released under the GPL. A lot of different people weigh in, like Donald Stuft and Jacob Kaplan-Moss, as everybody should be aware that there isn't a good Python 3 MySQL connector for Django at this stage. There was a post entitled Django Security and OWASP Project on the 20th of January, posted by Michael Coates. He says, over at OWASP, which is the Open Web Application Security Project, that's a project that's been around since 2001, they've started a framework security project. His goal is to try and capture the security posture, opinions, and capabilities of different frameworks. He said when he was leading the security team at Mozilla, they worked with Django a ton, and he says, you guys have always been on the leading edge of framework security. It was an easy choice to start with Django for the OWASP framework security project. And of course, our now erstwhile BDFL Jacob Kaplan-Moss, who is now head of security at Heroku, then replies, this sounds right up my alley. I'll jump on the list and post some more info over there. What they're looking for help for, and I believe that they're approaching Django first, is a review of their list of security controls in frameworks, which will in turn become a standard list of security controls for frameworks, and assistance about adding any missing security controls. If you're interested in joining this mailing list, Google OWASP, that's O-W-A-S-P, Framework Security Project. So there was a bunch of little stuff on the list as well. There was a post called Schema Editor Changes Feedback Request by Michael Manfrey, who is really involved with the databases, and he's working on MS SQL support, that's Microsoft SQL support, for Django 1.7, bless his soul. There was a quick follow-up on the post from last month about using setup tools to make Django admin.py runnable on Windows. The summary is, as posted by Florian, we're not going to support setup tools in distutils. It makes the setup process difficult to debug and test. There seems to be a bug in Pip when installing the wheel, and there's a pull request for this issue now at pull request number 2116 on GitHub. There's another small thread about databases and settings, which is called testing parameters in database settings, and this relates to ticket number 21775, where there's no facility to specify the data file of a Django test Oracle table space. And this is just a discussion about how settings should be organized in order to facilitate that kind of setting for Oracle. There is a technically heavy review requested for ticket number 21751, which is a new cleanup optimization. This is from Michael Mantry also, and it's basically about how Django doesn't do a good job of closing cursors. There is a thread about enforcing the use of a Unicode string in settings.languages. This is a pretty long discussion about the Python 2.7 problem of Unicode not being handled correctly, in as far as it affects the settings, particularly for settings languages, of course, because this is where people are most likely to want to use Unicode. Kind of a self-referential problem where settings doesn't correctly handle Unicode, whereas the language settings specifically exist to handle Unicode. There was a thread called CAS in Cache Framework, and this is about this was posted by Alexei Moskvin on January the 18th, and this is about using compare and set in Memcache, and apparently the Django Cache API doesn't support this, and he was just flagging it as something that he would like to have supported. Patches are welcome, as always. There was a really quick post called Quick Question Re Typo Fixing Etiquette, posted on January 25th by James Turley. And this question is, James seems to be going through and making a lot of really tiny corrections, like grammatical corrections and commas and that kind of thing. And he was just asking to clarify, as the documentation says, that you should make a ticket for every pull request. And he was saying, well, if I make a ticket for every pull request, then it's going to turn into an absolute. There is going to be a lot of tickets and a lot of pull requests. And Tim Graham just clarified that he said any logical grouping like fixing bad apostrophes or fixing grammatical errors in file/file would be acceptable. He says they definitely don't want a pull request for every individual correction. That'll just clutter up the commit history. And last and very lastly was my post to the dev list about the proposal of this podcast. Well, that's it for me for another 4 weeks for the Django Update podcast. If you like the music in this podcast, and rightly you should, it was all performed by our erstwhile BDFL Adrian Holovardi, who's very generously given me permission to reproduce it here. The theme music was both composed and performed by him, and the others are from his YouTube channel. But you can also buy his album on Bandcamp. He goes by the name of Adrian Holovardi as one word on Bandcamp. Also thanks to Andrew Godwin and Daniele Procida for their time zones notwithstanding, and the support of Russell Keith McGee in his interviews and kind words, and Matt Austin, and thanks to Dave Pretty and Greg Jolly. Without these guys, this podcast wouldn't have happened. Talk to you again next time, and this is the Django News Podcast for the 26th of January 2014. I'm Elena Williams.